You're listening to KAWC. We are coming up on 2 o'clock. And as usual, on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, we bring you Gabry's Private Stock. Unfortunately, this week we had a brilliant plan that we were going to do a special edition of Gabry's Private Stock as part of our pledge drive. And we had picked out one of his great shows, and we were going to talk all about it and encourage people to donate. And then we found out on Monday that, unfortunately, John Gabry had passed away. And it sent a real shock through the KAWC family. And we're all a little bit taken aback. And so we scrapped our original plan. And instead, today, we're going to do a special tribute show for John Gabry and for all of his fans of Gabry's Private Stock. And we've got one of his great shows that we've edited a little bit. And it's going to give us a chance to not only hear from John and hear the great talent that we've all been fans of over these many years, but also we're going to take some time to let some folks share their memories of John, especially the folks that have worked with him here at KAWC over the years. Right now, let's start off with a beautiful intro to another edition of Gabry's Private Stock.
A sleepy lagoon and two hearts in tune in some lullaby land. This is John Gabry here, and welcome to the program, Music on the Afternoon Side, Music from the Private Stock. I've said many times that just about any decade that you want to talk about in American history has had some pretty doggone music, and that includes the 1860s, sure. This song is playing, Mr. Harry James and Sleepy Lagoon, is not from the 1860s, but it is from another fascinating era. They call it the era of the big band. It was much more than that. There was big band, but there was just every kind of music on the air. And the added minus, I guess, and in some ways plus, of a war, the best of times, the worst of times, when those songs meant so much more. And it seems to have an eternal fascination for not only Americans, but for the world, because it was, of course, the biggest war that was ever fought. And we look at it in movies, we see it on television, we read books about it, and every once in a while on some forgotten program by an old duck like me, you actually hear the music. That's what we're going to do for a while today here on the Afternoon Side. Gabry's Private Stock. Sleepy Lagoon. That, strangely enough, is not an American song. It was written by Eric Coates, a Britishman. And, oh, yeah, I've had calls say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. That's an American song. No, it's British. But, boy, did we make it American when Harry James got that 45 caliber trumpet going. Any time that in the past when I've ever done a concert somewhere, like at Elder Hostel or out at one of the trailer parks or something like that, in years past, that was the one song that was sure to empty the seats. Everybody got out on the floor and danced to Sleepy Lagoon. It was one of the most popular songs of the 1940s. Harry James. And here, just in case you haven't heard her voice for a while, is Mrs. Harry James. You remember Betty Grable, don't you? Attended that many a time, Betty Grable. That was the voice of that lovely blonde starlet, who was quite simply the most popular actress in Hollywood all throughout the beginnings of the war. Beginning, I believe, with that movie, A Yank in the RAF, which he starred in with Tyrone Power. Oh, she was pretty. She was not exactly the girl next door. But she was, I also think, the number one pinup along with Rita Hayworth. Well, pinups were necessary for morale. Yeah. And here was another gal with a marvelous voice. I don't think Kitty Callan ever posed for pinups. She could have, but I don't remember seeing those pictures at all. But this is another typical wartime song. Pretty Kitty Callan, as we used to call her, who's just waiting for that train to come in.
Thank you.
I think the identification should be Harry James, his trumpet, and his band. That, well, I still think it's the best trumpet that there ever was for a dance band. It just, it had that je ne sais quoi, I don't know what you call it, that that a good dance band in 1943 should have. Yeah. Well, at any rate, kids, if you're interested in that period of time, or if you were there, or you're remembering some of these songs, you know it's the real stuff. This is the way we were. And being one of the best bands in the country, Harry James attracted some absolutely prime A number one, oh, look at there, kind of talent.
Private, just one of the crowd. He
Helen Forrest from August of 1942. One of those wartime songs. Yeah, the very absolute best. The best of the female singers and indeed the best of the male singers. Like this guy, Dick Hames.
Stars in the sky were dancing one night perfect for romancing. The night a sinner kissed an angel, he wanted thrill, she wanted love. His sighs were soft and tender as he begged her to surrender. The night a sinner kissed an angel, and she believed that it was love. How was she to know that every lovely vow was part of the game he was playing? But to his surprise, he realized somehow he meant every word he was saying. Yes, miracles can happen, I know, 'cause I saw it happen. That night a sinner kissed an angel, that was the night I fell in love.
Dick Hames singing with Harry James, getting up real close to that RCA 44 ribbon microphone. Yeah. Oh. Well, back in those days, RCA microphones were quite simply the best you could get. And the male singers loved them because there was something about them called a proximity effect. The closer you got to the microphone, the more mellow your voice sounded. Yeah. Yeah. I one time or another brought one out to the radio station, hooked it up and said, what the heck, I'll just show them. So I talked into a regular dynamic mic like I'm talking to into right now. And then I hooked up the ribbon mic and, oh boy, I tell you, it just got so mellow. I thought it sounded terrible. So we stick with the dynamic mics or the condensers nowadays. But, oh, boy, those were the days of the dancing. And speaking, as I was, of high-quality vocalists, here's a guy that, though he wasn't the most popular guy around, but you might remember this voice. He sang with Harry James, too.
¶¶
nothing at all. Half a love never appealed to me. If your heart never could yield to me, then I'd rather have nothing. Nothing at all. If it's love, there is no in between. Why begin and cry for something that might have been? No, I'd rather have nothing at all. Oh, please don't bring your lips so close to my cheek. Don't smile or I'll be lost beyond recall. The kiss in your eyes and the touch of your hand makes me weak, and my heart may grow dizzy and fall. I fell under the spell of your call. I would be caught in the undertow. And so you see, I've got to say no, no. All or nothing at all.
Your miniature time machine here. We call it KAWC. Well, on Sunday afternoons at 2 o'clock at any rate. Yes, Mr. Frank Sinatra singing along with Harry James. Or as Jimmy Durante used to call him, yeah, he's the Moonlight Sinatra.
And that's John Gabry for you. You're listening to a special edition of Gabry's Private Stock here on KAWC. We are Colorado River Public Media. I'm Dave Reek, general manager here at KAWC. And we're doing a special tribute show today for John, who passed away last week. And a lot of us want to share our memories and thoughts about John. A lot of folks are posting on the Facebook page for KAWC, Colorado River Public Media. Folks like Michael Fierros, who says, I remember being a student employee from 01 to 04, and John was a great mentor and friend. Lots of great memories when I worked there, and thank you to Michael for posting there. If you have a thought or a memory about John Gabry you'd like to share with us, you can give us a call at 928-344-7693. That's 344-7693. We've got some folks hanging out here, and we'll be glad to take down your thoughts and try to include them in the show here in the next little bit. One person that's been working very closely with John Gabry over the last few years is KAWC's production assistant Myra Vasquez, and she's been working here for a while, and she typically works alone on the KAWC studios in the weekend doing production work to make sure that all the programs that you hear on KAWC sound really great. But on Sunday afternoons, she would get her visit from John Gabry, and I got a chance to talk with Myra about it a little bit earlier this week.
It was always very quiet, very alone, and then suddenly he would come in an hour before a show to talk. He always had something to talk about, and I would usually have the door locked. He would knock, and then he'd come by, and then he'd sit in Brenda's chair, and then we have a nice talk about anything. He always had a story. Anything, any one little thing I mentioned, he'd have a story for it. A 20-minute, 30-minute story of anything.
Well, that's a nice distraction then from being all alone at the station, right?
Yeah.
What were some of the things that he would talk about? Things about radio or?
He'd talk about, yeah, anything, radio, San Diego, Yuma. We had actually forbidden words. The forbidden word was the F word, which was food. Anything about food was a no-no. Because he'd ask me, oh, Myra, how long are you going to be here until? And I said, oh, 6 or 7. Oh, no, you must be hungry and are you okay? Oh, well, yeah, I'll get hungry. And then he'd always say, oh, well, I'm going to go home and eat this and this and that. Maybe some leftover chili pepper or maybe some anything. He would just have the always talking about food. Well, it turned out that that just became the F word. So no food, no talking about food. He would always mention food. And I'd give him this look, and he'd just laugh and say, okay, no more F word.
And, of course, you would, the way we had it set up is while he was doing his show, you would be recording the show and then keeping notes so that we could have a playlist of his list. And, of course, that was a little tough because sometimes, I mean, most of these songs you never heard before, right?
The most difficult part of my job was keeping notes on his program because I had never heard of, he had the weirdest artists, just languages that I have, Italian and German and from the 30s and 20s and even from the previous centuries. And I'm sitting there trying to write down things, songs and titles and artists. And that was just so difficult. And he would always tell me, oh, Myra, I'm so sorry. You have to keep notes on this crap.
And then he would come in the next week with his own playlist of that same show, and we could compare the two.
Yeah.
But it was funny because I listened to his show frequently, and a lot of times he'd play songs and never even tell you who it was. He wouldn't even mention the artist.
Yeah, it was just whatever he felt like playing, whatever was on his mind. That was his show, basically, whatever was on his mind.
Now, one of the other aspects that's, I think, interesting is that you got a chance to talk to a lot of his fans, people who would call in during the show or during the pledge drive.
Oh, his fans are some of the most interesting, funny people you'll ever talk to.
And what were some of the things that they would say that you can say on the radio?
Let me think. They just all sounded really familiar. Like a lot of them knew him, and they were just friends. They just said some wonderful things about him. There was a caller who called a few times, and I was convinced that was John Gabriel a few times. He sounded a lot like him, and he said, you know, Gabriel, I love his program. It's my favorite program. I could listen to nothing but Gabriel, and I would be okay. I was convinced that was Gabriel, but with an accent.
Doing some kind of accent.
Because, you know, John Gabriel, him and his accents. He had a lot of accents.
I think it would be like him to call you up just to jerk you around a little bit.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's fun. Well, that was kind of an interesting addition to your education here at Arizona Western College was those Sundays afternoons with Gabriel.
Yeah, I think I learned more from him than I would in any music appreciation class. And he told me some very interesting radio stories, a lot of advice for, you know, in case if anyone wanted to go on the air, he gave me some good advice. And I'll always take that to heart.
And then for the last couple of months since he got ill, you've been taking his archive shows and editing them up so that we could continue to broadcast them. And what's that been like?
Oh, it's very fun listening to it was always fun listening to his previous shows, his randomness. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed putting together and rearranging some of his programs. It was just, that was... they were boring.
Well, that's great. Well, we're going to we don't really have a plan yet. I think right now we're all still in shock. I think we're going to continue to run the greatest hits of John Gabry for a while. We've got a few left, right?
Oh, we have plenty.
And I think we're going to continue with that at least for a little while until we can think of another alternative. I mean, no one's going to ever take his place, I don't think.
Oh, no.
A very special man, and Myra, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your experience with you. I know it's a hard time, but I think John definitely deserves to be remembered, not only for what people heard him say over the radio, but for some of these behind-the-scenes aspects.
Yeah, one of the most interesting people I'll ever meet.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
And you're listening to a special tribute broadcast of Gabry's Private Stock here on KAWC. We've got some great posts on our Facebook page, including this thought from the Schoenfelds. I'll never forget the life lessons that I've learned from Mr. Gabry. He was a true master of the theater of radio, from his unique teaching style to his kind-hearted yet professional approach to journalism. John Gabry was a class act to the end. We will miss you very much. And we want to thank the Schoenfelds for that wonderful sentiment. We're going to play some more of this special program of John Gabry's. And this is a perfect example of the theater of radio that John Gabry was so talented at. Another segment focusing on the World War II era.
It's not a song. This is an excerpt from a CBS News program. And I think this is the first time I've ever played it on the air. It's a matter of life and death. It's a story of a bombing raid over Berlin. And I didn't want to play it because I was kind of thinking happy thoughts and everything, but I'll tell you what, kids, that's the way it was during the war. Amidst all of the killing and everything, we had songs like, "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning," "The Best of Times," "The Worst of Times." This was one of the greatest newsmen, I think, that was ever on the air, on radio or television, Edward R. Murrow. He did it. I mean, he went out where the action was. This was one of his reports from London. The bombing raid took place in a Lancaster bomber. We had the B-17 and the B-24, and the British had that wonderful Avro Lancaster, which could eat up damage just as well as a B-17 could. But over Germany, especially over Berlin, you had the most intense anti-aircraft fire, flak, they used to call it. And it literally was a matter of life and death. That's the way we were and Britain was in the 1940s.
No one seemed to be shooting at us, but it was getting lighter all the time. Suddenly, a tremendous big blob of yellow light appeared dead ahead, another to the right and another to the left. We were flying straight for them. Dead ahead, there was a whole chain of red flares, looking like stoplights. Another lamp was coned on our starboard beam. The light seemed to be supporting it. Again, we could see those little bubbles of colored lead driving at it from two sides. The German fighters were at him. And then, with no warning at all, D-Dog was filled with an unhealthy white light. I was standing just behind Jock and could see all the seams on the wings. His quiet Scots voice beat into my ears. "Steady, lads. We've been coned." His slender body lifted, half out of the seat, as he jammed the control column forward and to the left. We were going down. Jock was wearing woolen gloves with the fingers cut off. I could see his fingernails turn white as he gripped the wheel. And then I was on my knees, flat on the deck, for he had whipped the dog back into a climbing turn. The knees should have been strong enough to support me, but they weren't. And the stomach seemed in some danger of letting me down, too. I picked myself up and looked out again. It seemed that one big searchlight, instead of being 20,000 feet below, was mounted right on our wingtip. D Dog was corkscrewing. As we rolled down on the other side, I began to see what was happening to Berlin. The clouds were gone, and the sticks of incendiaries from the preceding waves made the place look like a badly laid out city with the streetlights on. The small incendiaries were going down like a fistful of white rice thrown on a piece of black velvet. As Jock hauled the dog up again, I was thrown to the other side of the cockpit. And there below were more incendiaries, glowing white and then turning red. The cookies, the 4,000-pound high explosives, were bursting below like great sunflowers gone mad. And then as we started down again, still held in the light, I remembered that the dog still had one of those cookies and a whole basket of incendiaries in his belly, and the light still held it. And I was very frightened. I looked down, and the white fires had turned red. They were beginning to merge and spread, just like butter does on a hot plate. The bomb doors were open. And then there was a gentle, confident upward thrust under my feet, and Boz said, "Cookie gone." A few seconds later, the incendiaries went. And D-Dog seemed lighter and easier to handle. I began to breathe and to reflect again that all men would be brave if only they could leave their stomachs at home. When there was a tremendous whoomp, an unintelligible shout from the tail gunner, and D-Dog shivered and lost altitude. I looked to the port side, and there was a Lancaster that seemed close enough to touch. He had whipped straight under us, missed us by 25, 50 feet. No one knew how much. The navigator sang out the new course, and we were heading for home. I looked on the port beam at the target area. There was a red, sullen, obscene glare. The fires seemed to have found each other, and we were heading home. Berlin was a kind of orchestrated hell, a terrible symphony of light and flame. There were four reporters on this operation. Two of them didn't come back. Two friends of mine, Norman Stockton of Australian Associated Newspapers, and Lowell Bennett, an American representing International News Service. There is something of a tradition amongst reporters that those who are prevented by circumstances from filing their stories will be covered by their colleagues. This has been my effort to do so. I have no doubt that Bennett and Stockton would have given you a better report of last night's activities. He was...
Woof. That was an actual report from Edward R. Murrow of a bomb run over Berlin in a Lancaster bomber. Here's a song about a B-17.
Flying to a fame, there's a flying fortress with a knocked out name.
Pistol packing mama, hear the airmen say. Pistol packing mama, lay those bombs away.
Why, just the other morning, the CO walked on in. Then the CO told us that we would bomb Berlin.
Pistol packing mama, spread your wings and flap. Lay those bombs away, babe. Right in Hitler's lap.
Oh, then we boarded Mama, and Mama took us high in the wild blue yonder, high into the sky.
Pistol packing Mama, see that land below. Pistol packing Mama, let your pistols go.
And spin that turret, Mama, spit them bullets clean. Shake them old engines and shake that old machine.
Push aside that agate, lay it on the line. Pistol packing Mama. Babe, you're doing fine.
Well, now the job is done, babe, baby, take a bow. We'll be back tomorrow, but let's go home for now.
Lay those bombs away, babe, lay those bombs away. Pistol packing mama, lay those bombs away.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Miller, the Army Air Force Band, the Crew Chiefs, and a song about a B-17 named Pistol Packin' Mama. And that name, of course, was inspired by that wonderful song by Al Dexter that was so extremely popular during World War II. Those were the days, my friend. You're listening to Music on the Afternoon Side. Here's another song with a familiar name in it that was extremely popular during World War II, Bing Crosby.
Mexicali Rose, stop crying. I'll come back to you some sunny day. Every night you'll know that I'll be pining. Every hour a year while I'm away. Dry those big brown eyes and smile, dear. Banish all those tears and please don't sigh. Kiss me once again and hold me. Mexicali Rose, Cali Rose, goodbye.
Jive on my milk diet. So, milkman, keep those bottles quiet.
Quiet.
Been jumping on swing shifts all night. I turned it out my quota. All right.
He's beat right down to the sod, and he's got to dig him some knobs.
So, milkman, keep
keep those bottles quiet. Now the noise of the riveter, I don't mind, cause the man with the whiskers has a lot behind it.
But you can't keep punching with that victory crew when you're making him punchy with that bottle move.
I want to give my all if I'm going to give it, but I gotta get my shut eye if I'm going to rivet.
So bail out Bud with that milk barrage,
cause it's unpatriotic to sabotage.
Milkman, keep those bottles quiet.
Keep those bottles quiet.
Quiet.
Milkman, keep those bottles quiet.
Keep your bottles quiet.
Quiet.
Keep the great A riot. Mr. Milkman, you better listen to me and keep your old bottles from bothering me.
That was the old professor in the College of Musical Knowledge. I said, well, kid, that's the way we were during the war years and some of the songs we sang. And that thing of Edward R. Murrow reporting a bombing raid over Berlin, it was all very real.
And it's all very real when we hear it on the radio from John Gabry. This is a very special edition of Gabry's Private Stock, a tribute to John Gabry, who was so adept at creating theater of the mind through radio every Sunday afternoon from 2 to 4 o'clock right here on KAWC. And I'm Dave Reich. I'm general manager here, and we're doing this special tribute edition of the show since John Gabry passed away about a week ago. And we're sitting around here at our studio. If you want to call in and share an idea or memory of John, give us a call at 928-344-7693. That's 928-344-7693. And a lot of folks are sharing their thoughts on Facebook, on the social media. And Alice Ferris is here because she's a lot better at that stuff than I am. And Alice, what are folks telling you?
Well, I actually spoke with Mike Suba this afternoon, and he's a member of our leadership circle and a local accountant. And he mentioned that I never met John in person, but I felt like I met him through the radio. I really appreciated John's talents and the wide range of music he presented. There were moments when I'd just hear a song and I'd set down whatever I was doing and just listen. And I think that's very true. From Facebook, we got a comment from G.E. Chamberlain, who says, I got to know John in the early 70s. His passing diminishes my world greatly. Rest in glorious peace. I thought that was very nice.
That's beautiful.
And then we also have a comment from Lenore Stewart, who said, Yuma is fortunate to have a lot of special treasures, but none as special as my friend John Gabry. The variety of music he played and the stories that he had to go along with them were priceless. Thanks for the memories.
That sounds a lot like a post that my wife Ellen made about becoming a Gabry listener once we were moved to Yuma. And she wrote on Facebook, sometimes she felt a little crazy for listening to a wacky show, but she always learned something. And I can remember many Sunday and afternoons sitting by the pool learning a lot from Gabry's Private Stock, and as many of us have.